the point in getting your hopes up when all you're ever getting is choked up when you're coked up and can't remember the reason why it broke up? You call her in the morning when you're coming down and falling like an old man on the side of the road. Cause when you're apart you don't wanna mingle, when you're together you wanna be single. Ever the chase to taste the kiss of bliss that made your heart tingle? How much greener the grass is with those rose tinted glasses, but the butterflies they flutter by and leave us on our asses. Cause I love to feel love but I can't stand the rejection. I hide behind my jokes as a form of protection. I thought I was close but under further inspection seems I've been running in the wrong direction. There's fish in the sea for me to make a selection.
Social Justice Radio on 93.3 FM, The Fox, coming to you live from Antigonish, Nova Scotia.
And now, we're by Villain Accelerate, created by Darren Okafo. Welcome to this week's episode of Social Justice Radio. My name's Sophie Tenet, and here with me I have, you want to introduce yourselves?
My name's Hannah.
My name's Amy.
And my name's Alex.
Today we're talking about the Eat Local movement, how it relates to social justice, and what's going on here in Antigonish, and how you, as university students and members of the community, can get involved. So, eating local was never really a social justice issue before the introduction of things like globalization and consumerism. People usually had to live off their own land, do their own farming, that kind of stuff. So they would just exchange their own goods. The increased trades and connections with other countries now allow us to have more exotic foods available more readily and that kind of thing, but we never really stop and think of how our food got to its final destination of sale. A lot of the times the labels will say that it's organically grown, but we don't really stop and think about the stuff that isn't organically grown, let alone locally grown. So this is what our conversation today is kind of going to be based around, some ideas of how we can change that. So the first thing we can kind of talk about is what are the difficulties in being a university student and eating locally?
So I think it's different for people who are off campus and people who live in residence. Because in residence you have meal plans, which I'm sure you guys think is really great, right?
No. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, it's awful, right? But I find because I live off campus, and I find it's very easy, or not very easy, but it's a lot easier for me to go to the farmer's market on Saturday and base some of my meals around locally grown food, just because I do have to plan out my meals anyway, and I do have to buy the food anyway. But you guys want to talk a bit about what it's like, just the challenges you face living on residence and trying to eat locally?
Well, all of our meal plan is at one meal hall, so it's hard to figure out what is local because obviously everything's not labeled within meal hall. But if you have a smaller meal plan and you can buy breakfasts and things like that at the farmer's market, that's a great option for you for on a meal plan on campus.
I guess I'll kind of just speak to living off campus. Even though it's a lot easier, like you said, Hannah, and it's definitely a lot more accessible for people living off campus, I think there's still a degree of like privilege that comes along with shopping at the farmer's market. Depending, sometimes food is cheaper at the farmer's market, and you're getting locally grown products and produce, but there are a lot of times where it's unaffordable, so I think depending on what your situation is as a student or a community member, you may not have the ability or the resources to be able to eat local. So I think it's one of those things, it's a double-edged knife, is that the saying? Because you may want to support local farmers and support local food systems, but you may just not have the resources for it. So I think it's one of those things that is really complicated. It's not necessarily as simple as just going to the farmer's market and buying food, which is kind of a shame.
Another tempting thing as someone who lives on residence is the cheap food, because we are all university students and we're all paying insane amounts of money to be here. So another really controversial thing in buying from big companies are cash crops, which are essentially just crops grown solely for the purpose of profit. So these companies will produce exclusively this crop just for the sake of gaining money. So we see this in mostly plants. A lot of livestock doesn't really fall under this terminology. But the unfortunate thing is that monocropping or sole cropping, which is just growing the one crop, can actually result in soil degradation and disease and pathogens. We saw this in 1845 in Ireland with the potatoes. They lost them all, and it actually can create hunger and starvation and that kind of stuff. So
The other thing about like monocrops and cash crops is that it can be really detrimental to small farmers and farmers in general when companies or larger organizations kind of buy out land and they have a monopoly on the market. Small farmers are often forced to do away with the crops that they already have, vary crops, practices that may have been practicing for years in terms of like crop rotation and that sort of thing, like sustainable practices. Farmers are often forced to kind of do away with those practices and buy into these monocrops, so that can be like really detrimental to small communities.
Another really controversial topic is GMOs, so genetically modified organisms. This happens a lot with plants and sometimes meat, even some dairy products too. So these products will be genetically modified to either be more mass-produced or to come out a certain way. Even grapples are a GMO because they are genetically modified to be apples but to taste like grapes. Sometimes these products, if they are like chemically imbalanced and that sort of thing, can actually cause illness and sickness in humans. So buying from these big companies that use these big methods of scientific alteration is also could be detrimental to the buyer.
Another controversial point about genetically modified organisms is that when you buy them, I mean, think about things like the grapple or, you know, we have a GMO to make our strawberries last longer or to make our tomatoes look bigger and more red, when really I feel like we could be doing more effective things to solve hunger, to grow crops where we really couldn't before in low water soil. So I think, you know, the way that we've used GMOs have been detrimental, where we could have used them for something positive, yet we see just these really weird things that we don't need, that aren't necessary, coming out of them. So I think that's really, really a low point as well.
And so we're going to take a quick break and give you a chance to listen to a great song loosely related to food. It's called Strawberry Swing by Coldplay.
What a waste of fame.
right, and we're back with 93.3 The Fox and Social Justice Radio. So right now we're going to switch over to talking about local food and the food scene in Nova Scotia and Canada. So buying sustainable food has gone up actually 92% since 2007, so the movement has really grown in the past couple of years. It's really about taking local food and making it a global movement, so that's the idea of it. And there's many organizations across Canada even to support this, buying local food. One of them that is big in Ontario, Quebec, Manitoba, and British Columbia is Local Food Plus, and it has been around since 2005, and it's all about Canada's local sustainable food system. And they offer, what's special about them is that they offer local sustainable certification. So for farmers to get this certification, they have to have sustainable production systems, so they have to eliminate all the pesticides, fertilizers, and hormones they use for their farming. They also have to provide safe and fair conditions for farm labor, so people who work on their farms. They also have to provide healthy and humane care for if they have any livestock on their farm, as well as protect and enhance biodiversity on their farm and reduce farm energy consumption. So since this is such a big organization, and it does cost a bit of money, it's $600 per every 3 years for farmers to certify. The other benefits for farmers is that they have a protection of all their farmland and people who work on their farms. They also work with institutions and restaurants that Local Food Plus is associated with, so they can sell their local food to restaurants and educate through schools. And a survey done by Friends of the Greenbelt, which is an organization in Ontario, found that 79% of consumers actually prefer local food, and 91% of consumers want easier access to local options. So this is a great incentive for local farmers to take part in this certification and be part in the local food movement. So in Nova Scotia, there is the organization Select Nova Scotia, which is the big local food movement organization. And they really provide a lot of information to consumers about what's seasonal. And I actually have a list of things that are seasonal from October to December if you're looking out for local food this season. Lots of apples, cabbage, carrots, vegetables like Swiss chard and zucchini, squash and pumpkins, obviously. And other things that are year-round that are seafood and meats and dairy products, so things to look out for. So Select Nova Scotia really promotes this local food buying, and they also support the farmers markets across the province. As for the Nova Scotia farming scene, there was an article done by Chris Benjamin from the Halifax Coast newspaper, and he's talking about the local food movement and how farming is developing in Nova Scotia. And actually, we have lost more than half of our farmland within the past 35 years in Nova Scotia, and the average age of a farmer is actually 57 years old in Nova Scotia, and only 7% of the farmers are under the age of 35. So they really need a movement in Nova Scotia of more agriculture, education, and people getting into this field. And Nova Scotia actually imports 93% of its food, so that's not helping the food movement at all, the amount of imports. We're even importing apples and things that we even grow in our own province, so that's not necessarily aiding our movement here. And what Chris Benjamin from this article predicts is that Nova Scotia should implement a grant program of $30 million to start localizing Nova Scotian food. So that means they started in Quebec, and the government gives grants to local farmers, and that provides a bigger incentive for them to sell their food locally. And so some general benefits of buying local food that are promoted is that it strengthens local economies, so you're giving back to your community. You're promoting local jobs in your community. You're supporting your own community members, which is great. You interact with the people who actually produce your food. You're protecting the environment in your own province, and you're staying healthy, as we talked about GMOs and things like that. Eating local is a very healthy thing for you. Any other comments about the local scene in Nova Scotia? All right. So we visited the farmer's market in Antigonish. It occurs every Saturday morning, and it's right beside the Antigonish skating arena. It occurs from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and they host a variety of local farmers who sell various things from local honey, lobster, baked goods, meats, produce, and much more. So we spoke to a few farmers, asking them how they got into farming and what they feel are the biggest benefits to eating local food. And you get to listen to what they have to say.
My name is Susie Murphy, and I'm part owner of Seabright Gardens with my husband.
Nice. So what inspired you to be a farmer?
Well, I guess I got into gardening as an inspiration from my mom, who's a big organic gardener. And so that's definitely where it started, but then I was really interested in environmental issues, and I was trying to think of how I could make a difference environmentally and how I wanted to incorporate that into what I was doing. And I thought, well, growing food was what I wanted to do.
That's great. So what do you actually raise and produce?
We do just vegetables. We do kind of we sell at the farmer's market, and then we have a CSA, which is Community Supported Agriculture, which people sign up for. They get a box every week, and they usually pay us at the beginning of the season or by the month, and we drop off until the season's done.
That's great. So through that, do you find a lot of community support through that program?
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh yeah, amazing. Like we're a very small scale, but we could be a lot bigger if we wanted to, and people are very excited about what we do.
That's great. And have you faced any challenges starting up farming?
I think probably the biggest challenge is that it's very hard for it to be a sole income, because it's seasonal, and you know, it's a lot of work. We do everything by hand. We don't have any machines. So if we were to go to the next level, you know, we'd have to put a certain amount of investment in there, and you know, to put that amount of investment in, we're not sure if we could make enough to make it worth it. So yeah, the seasonality of it and the scale has been kind of an issue to figure out. So we're keeping it really small, and it's a part earner.
And what do you think is the biggest benefit of buying local food?
Oh, well, definitely keeping the money local, you know, cutting out the middleman, and then also just developing relationships with customers about food and how it's grown and the importance of how it's grown and you know, how good it is for you.
That's great. All right, so thanks for your time and speaking with us.
Thank you.
So before we start with the questions, I'll just get you to introduce yourself, kind of tell us what you do.
I'm Casey Van de Zand. I'm a retired dairy farmer, and we're doing the farmer's market the last couple of years. I guess we just love the land. We just keep on.
Awesome.
Yeah, doing what the soil, you know, produce. So that's wonderful. We get lots of support for our family, so that's wonderful.
That's perfect.
Yeah, we enjoy it.
So the first question is, what inspired you to be a farmer?
I think basically it's the part of a tradition, and my dad was a farmer, my grandfather was a farmer, and so on. And so we had a large family, about eight children, and mom and dad, that made 10. We immigrated in 1956 to Canada from Europe. So anyway, there were five sons in our family, so they decided, well, somebody will be a farmer. I end up to be a farmer.
Cool.
But we love it.
So what are the challenges that you face now or have faced in the past with being
Well,
a
we've
farmer?
Been retired now since the last, or so-called, I don't call it retirement, it's like retreading. Because you do take on another, you know, another job or so on. But today, I think a lot of it is finances, you know. But I think we're looking at much the bigger scale. Like years ago, you know, our farm was passed on from myself to my son and his wife, and they're still farming today. At least, you know, she's farming today. So, and they're doing a good job. But I think basically it was to. You're looking at, you know, a lot of times it costs too much to get into it, you know, unless you're passed on from farm to farm, it's a little harder to get even to think of getting into it, you know. But the finances is the one, because it takes a lot of capital to get into it. But it's possible. It's possible.
So even though it may be financially tough for farmers, do you find that there's an increase in demand for local food from consumers?
Yes, there is. I think more and more especially we find anyway, being farmers market, that there's more and more people looking for that hands-on, you know, and knowing that it's locally grown, and they have a chance to ask what you spray, what you produce, you know, and if anything, you know what I mean? If it's all organically grown, or, you know, so we try to. I think this market is growing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is.
So with that, can you name some benefits that there are to buying locally?
Well, the freshness is one of them. And then I think freshness and knowing what the product, where it comes from, or what's been done to the product, you know, before it gets here. It hasn't, you know, traveled 5,000 kilometers in order to get here, you know, just the other part of it. And I think the communication between the grower and the customer, you know, I think that's widened, you know, so people can ask, you know, and that'll certainly entice them to not only buy local, but to stay healthy.
Perfect. So thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome.
Maybe we can start out, maybe you can introduce yourself and what you do.
My name's Margaret Cornack, and I'm with Cornack Family Farm. We are blueberry producers and beekeepers.
Cool, thank you. So what inspired you to become a farmer?
I never intended to be a farmer. It just happened. We purchased property, became blueberry producers, and because of that, we needed bees to pollinate the blueberries, and it just went from there, and yeah, now we're both.
That's awesome.
But I love it.
That's
Wouldn't
awesome.
Do anything else.
That's so cool. So what do you grow or raise?
So what we do is the blueberry fields.
Yeah.
We harvest blueberries every second year, and then we use the bees to pollinate our blueberry fields, but because there is a demand for pollination and for other farmers, we've increased our hives from 2 hives to 300.
Wow.
So now we pollinate blueberry fields for other growers as well, and then we produce our own honey products.
Wow, that's really cool. So I guess this question is actually especially interesting because you said that you weren't intending on becoming a farmer. So what were some of the challenges that you faced becoming a farmer and setting up?
The biggest thing is you have to learn as you go.
Mm-hmm.
You don't... At the time, you couldn't go to school to learn to become a beekeeper, and that has changed. The province now has courses available that you can take, which would be a huge benefit.
Yeah.
So we've learned by trial and error, some of them good, some of them bad, but we've learned. And other than that, I think that's it. And beekeeping is becoming more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
It's changed over the years. When I started, there weren't any issues with bees. You'd kept them and they survived. They did well. But our weather's changing. We now have diseases we never did before. There's more issues with farmers using chemicals. Not just farmers, like even your local gardeners, things that are harmful to bees. So the challenge is to make people aware of those issues.
Yeah, that's very true. And how has the community supported you?
I've been lucky. They've supported me right from day one.
Yeah.
When I had the 2 beehives, I started at the farmer's market. That's 19 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
One little table, just liquid honey and a few little different varieties of jars. But as I grew, the farmer's market has grown. And as I said, we've grown from 2 hives to over 300, or just under 300 right now. We plan to still keep expanding. But no, they've always been there. Without them, I couldn't have grown to the extent that we did.
Wow, that's phenomenal. That's really cool. I guess along those lines, you're saying it's expanding. So do you feel there's an increase in demand for local food?
I think so.
Yeah.
People are being more aware of where their food comes from, and they're more concerned about how their food is grown and who produces it. When you come to the farmer's market, you can talk to the person who produces it, how they do it, and you can feel confident in what you are buying.
Yeah. No, very true. And I guess what are the biggest benefits to buying locally?
You know who's producing it and where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And you buy locally, your money stays in the community.
Mm-hmm.
You're spending it locally, but I'm spending it locally too, because I live here. It's, you know, taxes. It keeps going around.
Exactly. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much.
You're
it was nice speaking with you.
Anytime.
Have a good day.
Go ahead. So I'm Terrence Boyle. My wife Mary and I had 2 boys and a daughter on the farm in Tracadie, 500 acres, mixed operation. Beef, pork, and lamb. We have a provincial inspector meat shop. We grow 10 to 12 acres of fresh vegetables for a fresh market, and we also operate a commercial compost operation, which supplies crop inputs for our agricultural operation.
Alrighty, and what inspired you to be a farmer?
I don't know if I was ever inspired. It's just something I always had in the back of my head. I was brought up on a small farm, farming community, and it just progressed that way, I guess.
Okay. So what are the biggest challenges you face as a farmer?
Oh, there's lots of challenges. I guess the biggest one, the biggest one that I see that affects us daily is the weather. We have absolutely no control over it, and you're continually dealing with it. We've made a few changes on the operation to try to deal with it. We're starting to grow a fair bit of produce under plastic, so we can control the days of harvest and amount of water that it receives and when it receives it. Then it has extended our season both in the front end and the back end, so that's been a help. But this week past, we had a heavy rain on Monday, 44 millimeters of rain on the farm, and that just changed the whole what you'd planned for the week. Everything changes, so on a daily level, you're changing things as according to what's up in the sky there.
Yeah. Okay, so how has the community supported you to become a farmer?
In the last 10 years, we've been doing farmers markets, 10, 11 years, this particular farmers market, the change has just been incredible, how the community and the community as in the Antigonish area, Antigonish, you know, Goshawa County, the fringe areas that come to the market. The amount of people that are coming and the different groups that show up at the market. At one time, there was the really hardcore people, you know, that wanted to buy local products, local product. Now it's just a real broad selection of people coming to the market, and it's just growing exponentially, really.
So you feel the demand for local food has increased a lot?
It certainly has. When you take a look at what's going on worldwide, turn on the radio this morning, it's a recall of a meat product from local stores here. People hear that and it's starting to hit home, and you read some of the bigger food scares that have gone on across the country and across North America. Just people want to know where the food is coming from, and they're asking really tough questions. They want to know.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you think are the biggest benefits to buying local?
Well, the benefits to the consumer is they know the guy that produced that food. Can go right to him. If ever is a problem, they can deal with that one-on-one. There's no middleman, there's no transportation issues, there's no, you know, this is it. And as producers, whatever's in it, we're getting it. There's no processing guy, there's no transportation guy, there's no, you know, five times the markup. This is a dollar to be made, it goes right back to the producer.
All right, that's great. Thank you so much for your time, Terrence.
And we're back with Social Justice Radio 93.3 The Fox. So I hope you took away something from those farmers' interviews. They had a lot of great things to say about their local farms and how the community has supported them, so that's great to hear. So speaking of local produce and local food, we have a great song all about vegetables called The Vegetables by the Beach Boys. Enjoy.
Love you most of all, my favorite vegetable. If you brought a big brown bag of them home, I'd jump up and down and hope you'd toss me a carrot. I'm gonna keep well my vegetables card off and sell my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Oh, table vegetable.
I tried to kick the ball, but my tinny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, 'cause I'm so favorite at your table. I know that you feel better when you send us in your letter and tell us the news. Your favorite vegetable.
So, that was Vegetables by the Beach Boys. We're back on air with 93.3 The Fox, Social Justice Radio. And in the booth with us right now, we have Rebecca McAvoy, who is involved with the Campus Food Strategy Group on campus. So Rebecca's going to speak with us a little bit about her work on campus and the group's work on campus and some of her reactions to what we have been talking about so far. So, hey, Becca.
Hi, Amy. Thanks so much for having me today.
No worries. Maybe you can start, Becca, by just giving an introduction of, like, yourself, like, who you are, what you're interested in, and, yeah.
Sure. So, as Amy said, my name is Rebecca McAvoy. I'm a fourth-year student here at St. FX, and I am a student in the Development Studies program. I got involved with the CFSG in my the end of my second year, and we had a really great year last year and look forward to a whole bunch of great work again this year.
That's awesome, Becca. I guess, like, in relation to your involvement with the CFSG, tell us a little bit how you've been involved with local food systems on campus and the work that you've been doing.
Well, I was already interested in local food issues when I got to campus as a frosh, because I grew up in an agricultural community and my dad was a beekeeper. So I grew up at farmers markets talking with local producers and learning about some of their challenges. So when I came to St. FX, I was really interested in the agricultural scene here in Nova Scotia and to learn about local food and what's in season when. And I didn't hear a lot about that on campus. So I started asking some questions and I learned that there was other students who were interested in the same things and had the same questions. So we started looking at those together. And that's how it all began.
That's awesome. So you've kind of given us a little bit of an overview of how you were inspired to be involved with local food systems on campus. But maybe, Becca, you could give us more information about what the Campus Food Strategy Group is and, like, where that comes from, what it's involved with.
So the Campus Food Strategy Group is a multi-stakeholder group on campus that's looking at how we can make our campus food system here at St. FX more sustainable and bring more local and sustainably produced food onto campus for meal hall, for catering, and every other facet of our food system here at St. FX. The Campus Food Strategy Group is coordinated primarily by three students, but we have a whole group of dedicated volunteers and support, a support crew as well. And there are a number of key stakeholders who sit on this group, such as the Sodexo staff, administration, and other key decision makers. And we get to speak with faculty and students and administration to kind of look at these issues from a really broad perspective and try and find ways in where we can create some positive change. The Campus Food Strategy Group is not something that's happening only here at St. FX. It's actually part of a national project called the Campus Food Systems Project, and we're one of about 16 campuses now across Canada that are doing this kind of work, and the cumulative effect of all of these Campus Food Strategy Groups across Canada is super powerful, and it's really exciting to see the way that food service providers such as Sodexo and Chartwell's and Aramark, as well as the companies that provide food to them, such as Sysco, are starting to take notice of the grassroots mobilization that is happening thanks to students' efforts.
That's really phenomenal, Becca. That's great. And I think that it's really evident that the work that you're doing is actually making a change. I think that the group that you have is, like, really dedicated, and I think they're taking a really cool approach to it. So I think anybody who's listening, if they're interested in getting involved or are interested in what Becca's talking about, then they should definitely send her an email or something or a Facebook message. But so, Becca, I guess what I'll ask you next What have been your biggest barriers and your biggest successes with working with a campus food strategy group?
So I suppose I'll start with the biggest barrier. What we've really found is just the institutionalization of food systems and the regulations that come with our industrial food system today, where we have a lot of food imported and there's a lot of shipping and transportation networks and a lot of health and safety regulations, which really limit what we can do and where we can procure our food from. That's been our biggest barrier, because there's a lot of things that we would love to do and the capacity is there, the openness is there, but because of these regulations, we're kind of in a difficult situation to actually get things going. So I think that different food systems across on campuses, but also in hospitals and other institutions across Canada are really starting to look at some of these different regulations and just the way the system works to see if we can rethink this and get a little bit more creative to support our local economies and things like that. So that's one of the big issues here at St. Effects as well. I think one of our greatest successes has definitely been tapping into applied student research that's already happening on campus in order to re-examine some of these systems and the problems that I just mentioned. Campuses are great places to look at food systems and how we can be more creative, because we have a whole bunch of students here who are some of the brightest from across the country, and they need projects. We need things to learn. We want to dig into things that will have a real impact and tangible effects instead of just doing theoretical projects. So by linking up with the service learning program and different profs who teach relevant courses and are interested in giving their students a real project, we've been able to do a lot of great research that we can then share with Sodexo and their partners, as well as the administration, to propose real creative solutions here on campus.
That's awesome, Becca. And I guess our final question, so in being involved with this group and just in your own interest in local food systems on campus, why should students be interested in this and why should students get involved?
I think first and foremost because our experience has been that eating sustainably produced and local food is oftentimes a lot more exciting than the conventional food that you'll get at meal hall and things like that. And when you ask for certain things, the food service providers will take notice and they will step up and meet your requests because they work for you, right? You're the ones paying for the meal plan. So you have a tremendous amount of power to decide what kind of food is being brought on campus. So if students can leverage that, you're going to start seeing the things you're asking for, and you play a crucial role in making our food system more sustainable on campus. I think in the broader sense as well, it's important for students to be interested in local food and more sustainable food systems as a whole, because not only is it healthier for your own body, but it's healthy for your local economy. And if we can get more food from Antigonish County and from this part of Nova Scotia, it will really strengthen our economy here, which will have so many ripple effects throughout the province. As well, the food system is one of the biggest contributors of carbon emissions. And this is, global warming is one of the biggest problems of our time. And what we put on our plates is one way to have a tangible impact on reducing our carbon footprint. The transportation and the chemical inputs involved in the industrial food system are enormous, and what better and more fun way to help create a change than by eating healthy, delicious, creative food.
That's awesome, Becca. Thank you so much for being here today with us. So again, this was Rebecca McAvoy, a fourth year development studies and Spanish student and involved with a campus food strategy group on campus. Yeah, so thanks so much, Becca. That was really awesome. And I think the work that you're doing is super inspirational and is definitely going to make big changes on campus.
Thanks, Amy. And just a quick plug here. If any students out there are interested in getting involved with the Campus Food Strategy Group on campus, feel free to email the three coordinators, myself, Lisa Gunn, and Sarah Dodsworth. Our email address is st.fx@studentfood.ca.
Thanks, Becca. Okay, so next we are going to play another song, Food Chain by Eric Hutchinson.
Don't let this affect the game. Every 5 months we act the same. But I never get used to putting you off. And no one could have scripted this. Who knows what'll come of it? I refuse to believe it was all just a waste. Just look around, everybody's on the food chain. Funny, but funny.
Right, and we're back with Social Justice Radio 93.3 The Fox. I'm Hannah, and I'm just going to talk a bit about Dr. Shiva, who is a leading scientist, environmental activist, author, and agricultural innovator in India. Dr. Vandana Shiva, in 2012, we were incredibly lucky to have her here at St. Avex. She delivered a keynote speech on some local and global issues we're facing, such as globalization, agricultural agriculture, biodiversity, ecology, and water resources. In an interview with CropWatch.org, Shiva spoke about the concept of food democracy versus food totalitarianism. And here's what she had to say. Food totalitarianism, for me, is the very simple phenomena that a handful of corporations start controlling the food system from seed, beginning with seed as property. Totalitarianism, also, in the fact that genetic engineering unleashes hazards. So, I might want to be an organic farmer, but next to me is a genetically engineered field which contaminates my crops and denies me the right to produce safe, pure food for my consumers. It's an authoritarian system that takes away my freedom to grow quality food. In the U.S., about 2 years ago, the organic standards were attempted to be corrupted and genetically engineered crops and food were going to be identified as organic. That was food totalitarianism. Unfortunately, people rebelled. More than 275,000 American citizens said, "We will not allow organic standards to be contaminated by genetic engineering." And today, organic is safe. It is also totalitarian in the way these trade treaties were put into place. They were forced onto the world in India. We are being forced to import meat and waste from slaughterhouses. We are being forced to import wheat, sorghum, and milk, which we produce in abundant quantities. And those imports are destroying our markets, pushing our farmers into suicide. It is a system that is worse than any dictatorship that we are familiar with. So, I know, India for us isn't exactly local, and neither is the United States. But by understanding what's happening to the food we condone and to the food we buy and support from around the world, we can take an educated stand against food totalitarianism and this authoritarian system. Because when you know better, you do better. And in her interview, Dr. Shiva brings up excellent and terrifying reasons as to why eating locally and supporting farmers is so important. It is up to us as consumers to stand up for what we believe in. And our farmers market is a great way to do just that. As we've heard from our local farmers previously, more and more people are getting the food message. And they're supporting local farmers, now more so than ever, because people are demanding to know where the food comes from and to know that it's harvested and grown sustainably. But the battle is far from over. If everyone stopped avoiding the looming truth of just how unsustainable our farming and consumption practices are, it'd be harder to turn a blind eye. In her book, Earth Democracy, Justice, Sustainability, and Peace, which is a great read if you're interested in the topic, Dr. Shiva said something that really stuck with me, which I'd like to leave with you listeners to take into consideration next time you're grocery shopping. She said, "Whenever we engage in consumption or production patterns, which take more than we need, we are engaging in violence." So folks, as cliche as it is, it's true that you do have the power to be the change you wish to see in the world. If you're interested in learning more about Dr. Shiva, you can visit her blog. It's www.vandashiva.org. It's all one word. And I'd also just like to touch on the film festival that is coming up. You heard previously from a bee farmer, the Cornect Family Farm. And there's actually a movie about bees. It's called More Than Honey. And that is playing Saturday, 4:55 p.m. at the Capitol Theater. So be sure to check that out. Also, just to give you some more dates, on October 22nd, there is Developmental Studies 412 presentations going on in the CODI, room 242. It's for the summer internships and research. So be sure also to check that out.
That's a really good way to get an idea of like what students in development studies and other fields are doing in terms of development work and what they've been doing over the summer and their internships. So that's an awesome way if you are interested in these kind of things to get an idea of how you can get involved and how this could possibly be something that you might do later on in your school career. I guess just one more thing. We've been talking a lot about local food and local food systems, and Rebecca touched on a few ways that you can get involved on campus. Another sort of hub, which kind of allows students to explore these issues, is the Student Food Resource Center on campus. So the Student Food Resource Center was originally located on West Street in the Municipal Building, but this year it's been moved on campus in the bottom of McKinnon Hall. So if you stand with the Bauer Theater behind you and look straight ahead, you can enter through that door, and that is the Student Food Resource Center. You might be wondering how the Student Food Resource Center is connected to local food. So one of the things, there's so many issues that come along with speaking about local food systems, and one is accessibility to food. And so the idea that not everyone has access to healthy, varied, and appropriate food. And so food banks, as you know, have been kind of implemented to offer support for those people who do need that extra support. While it is a little bit of a Band-Aid solution, because it doesn't touch on the systemic issues that are actually causing poverty and food insecurity. Food banks and the Student Food Resource Center on campus are a great way to get involved and to be aware of the issues and to be a part of a community of people who are thinking about food insecurity and who are volunteering their time to be a part of that. So if you are interested in the Student Food Resource Center and being involved, you can email the coordinator, whose name is Shannon Lynch. And her email is su_food@stinfx.ca. And also, with the organization Meal Exchange and our on-campus Meal Exchange coordinator, she is actually planning right now the Trick or Eat campaign for Halloween. So the way that works is that you can come out by yourself or in a group, on the afternoon of Halloween, and, the group of students goes around town and collects food donations, just as if you were going trick or treating, but you're trick or eating, collecting non-perishable food items. So that's a great way to get involved as well. And I think like one of the most important things is like making connections on campus. So if these are things that do interest you, like one of the best ways to get involved and to really dig into these issues is to make connections. And some of these events and places are great ways to do that.
So after hearing all about the benefits about local food, you may be thinking, where do I go from here? One of the best ways to start is by heading out to your local farmer's market every Saturday beside the Anakinish Arena from 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. to purchase some of your groceries. Making a connection with the people that produce your food is so important, and you will have the opportunity to ask questions and become more knowledgeable about where your food comes from.
So with that, that is the end of our show for today. We are going to sign out. So this was Social Justice Radio on 93.3 The Fox. And this was Amy,
Alex,
Hannah,
and Sophie.
Welcome to Social Justice Radio on 93.3 FM, The Fox. Coming to you live from Antigonish, Nova Scotia.
Say those words.